Listening Library presents Project F by Jean Dupro. Read for you by Jeremy Carlisle Parker. Part 1. A Rescue Journey. 1. The Terrible Accident. All was going well in our country at the time this story begins, which is several hundred years in the future from the time you're reading it. There were no wars, few wildfires and floods, no famines. Almost everyone lived in one of the seven cities. They were small cities, and all of them were within a 2 or at most 3 day train ride of each other. They were built as circles, with a center from which the streets radiated out like the spokes of a wheel. If you could have seen them from above, at night, glowing softly with their thousands of lights, brightest in the middle, fading toward the edge, you would have thought they looked like 7 golden chrysanthemums scattered over the vast, dark land. Centuries of work had gone into building these cities. It wasn't easy. At any point, there could have been a wrong turn that ruined everything. There still could be. Such a point was approaching, in fact. And his outcome depended, though he didn't know this yet, on a black-haired boy named Keith Arlo, who was at his home in Cliff River City at the moment his parents received a letter. Margaret Arlo, Keith's mother, opened the letter and read, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Arlo, we are very sorry to inform you." Her face went pale, and she read on without speaking. She handed the letter to Keith's father, whose name was Arthur. He took the letter, scanned it, and said, "Oh, no."
"What is it?" Keith asked.
His father handed him the letter, and he read it quickly. "Unfortunately," it said, "being unfamiliar with ocean tides and currents, did not notice a sudden large wave. Husband went in to rescue, but both were swept away."
"Swept away?" Keith said. "Does it mean they've drowned?"
"It would seem so," his father said. "Alice and Dennis both."
Keith's mother leaned against the wall, held her hands at the sides of her face, and stared at the air. Alice was her sister. Dennis was Alice's husband. Keith read on. "As nearest relatives, you will be responsible for the child left on the beach, currently in the care of Sandwater Children's Home."
"I can't understand this," said Keith's mother.
"The child," Keith said. "That would be Lulu."
"Let's go and sit down."
Keith's father turned away.
"This is a shock. We need to think."
They sat talking until late into the night. At first, Keith's mother cried, and his father put an arm around her and tried to comfort her.
"I knew it was a mistake for them to move," she said between sobs. "Why did they do it? If they hadn't, they'd be here alive right now."
"They wanted something new," said Keith's father sadly. "Warmer weather, different scenes. They were young and adventurous. And a bit foolish."
"I begged them not to go," said Keith's mother. "I knew something bad would happen."
"Bad things can happen anywhere," said his father. "You just wanted your sister to keep on living next door."
"True, I did."
After a while, when Keith's mother was a bit calmer, they talked about Lulu, who was 6 years old.
"She must come and live with us," his mother said.
"Yes," said his father. "We'll have to get her back, right away, somehow."
Ordinarily, Keith's parents would have made the trip, but his father couldn't leave his business. He was a prominent battery maker in the city, and his shop, full of the wires and metals and fluids that could be put together to produce electricity in small amounts, enough to run a lamp or a fan, was always busy. And his mother, a designer of arches and columns and doorways for the Department of Buildings, had missed a step on a stone staircase the day before and broken her ankle. She could hardly walk. Keith said right away,
"I'll go."
His mother said, "Keith, 1,000 misfortunes can happen on a 2-day trip, especially to someone like you."
4-day trip, said Keith. 2 days each way.
Curse this foot, said his mother. I'd be on the train in a minute if I hadn't missed that step. His father simply said,
It's a big responsibility.
Keith reminded them that he was smart, capable, strong, and almost 14 years old, though his birthday was not for another 8 months. They talked for a long time. Keith's father kept pulling at his beard, as he often did when he was anxious. But finally, he said,
I suppose I could explain what you'd need to know.
And from that point, it was decided. The next morning, Keith and his father left their home on the top floor of the Bright Spot Apartments and started down the 3 flights of stairs. They passed Amity Wing, who was also going down. She was a pretty girl with long, dark hair who lived on the 2nd floor with her parents. And when Keith said,
I'm off on a train trip,
she raised her eyebrows and smiled.
Lucky you, she said. I've never been, but I'd love to go.
Many times he'd seen her from his window with her pack of friends, all of them talking, laughing, sometimes singing, carrying bags and bundles, heading up the river path. Where did they go? He didn't know. He'd never asked. Outside, the street was alive with city dwellers and their carts and bikes and wagons, their horses and dogs, their rolling crates of pumpkins, their cages of chickens, their baskets of eggs and pies and mushrooms and flowers.
I'm leaving home, Keith said to himself.
He had never left home before.
It was exhilarating.
They walked down 39th Avenue, beneath the russet and yellow leaves of the maple trees, and took the streetcar up Cameron Street to the train station. On platform 2, westbound train number 33 stood waiting. Engine, fuel car piled high with chunks of wood, and 4 passenger cars. Steam was already puffing around its wheels. Departure time, 7:30.
You climb on, said Keith's father. I want to see you on board and settled.
Keith climbed on. This was his first time on the train, and he found it wonderful. The long row of windows on either side, most of them open to the air. The wood-paneled walls and arched ceiling, and the pairs of seats, cushioned in deep red. His own seat was 12A. He stowed his blue canvas bag in the compartment underneath it, sat down, and thrust the window open. Outside on the platform stood his father, ready to give him parting advice. He was tall, like Keith, but his shoulders were slightly hunched because he spent so much time bent over his workbench. Keith looked down on him from the window, noticing the strands of white beginning to show in his shaggy dark hair.
Keep to yourself on this trip, his father said. Don't get caught up in anything.
Caught up?
You know the way you do.
Keith knew what he meant. Yes, he'd gotten caught up one time in a building project involving stones and water, which had ended badly. Another time, he and a friend had tried to swim the whole width of the river, but the current turned out to be stronger than expected, and they had to be rescued by a fishing boat. The swim was a failure, true, but the attempt was brave.
I won't get caught up in anything, he told his father.
Remember your mission and stick to it, his father said.
I will.
The train let out a long hoot and moved forward. Keith waved to his father. His father waved back, and then gradually grew smaller and smaller and disappeared. The conductor came through, collecting tickets. Keith settled back. People chatted or knitted or read or snacked. A child whooped in excitement. At first, there was no passenger in the seat next to Keith's, 12B, This was fine.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?